Session number 20456, reel 19.
Brigadier Wilson, reel 19. I was asking you how you became aware of the fact that the enemy were actually infiltrating into
well,
the positions.
There was quite a lot of activity going along on up this hill on my right, and messages were coming down saying that they wanted reserve ammunition up. And our second in command, Kenny Mill, took a party up with reserve ammunition in time to join the fiercest of the fighting, as it were. And then, when he was up there, they mounted a very considerable attack on him from, I think it was 312, I forget what they call the high corners of. And that was where the aeroplanes came in, because by which time we called for our support from brigade headquarters that could not see the target. Three aircraft came over and flew horribly suspiciously around the place. I hate aircraft flying over my head, obviously not knowing what it's going to look at. And to our horror, started attacking our own companies because of the red and yellow coloured, what do you call it, identity disc.
Recognition panels.
Yes, which were laid out in the correct form for the day. I forget what that was. And John Sim was there, and together we tried to get through to brigade headquarters, and sort of did, and we said, for God's sake, you know, tell these bloody aircraft to buzz off from there. What really fixed it was they dropped napalm on our own positions. Of course, napalm is a horrid thing. And that, with the smoke and everything else, so disorganized the positions they couldn't hold them. In the meantime, some other characters were infiltrating around my company on the left, so I couldn't move. And then, having used our napalm bombs on B and C companies, they had to go at me. But I dug in during the night, and that was with cannon only, and he had one casualty.
Did you shoot back at them?
No.
Did they eventually get called off by...
Eventually they were called off.
I think you also said that your forward observation officers have been withdrawn. Do you know why that was? Why you didn't
have
the
artillery
support?
That comes in our battalion history. I have no idea. I had none with me, so I didn't know it had happened. They wanted by 24th Division for an advance on another axis. Was
there any hint that you know your axis might be reinforced?
No. I mean, what you had was ourselves and the Middlesex on the two hills on the other side of the road, but nothing behind us.
But what about the American tanks? Were they
still
there?
Oh, they were around, yes. Yeah. But they couldn't get up the hills.
Mm. Did the Middlesex suffer from counterattacks at this stage?
No, they'd seen them off the day before.
So they were all right.
Yeah.
I think you said that after this disaster, you were withdrawn and went back into a rest area for a while. What happened while you were there?
Well, actually, we went forward. We went into Songju, which was the village on the road that we were advancing to, and we dug ourselves in. In slip tension, certainly in a defensive position, but you know, with ideas that we were going to, sort of take it easy for a bit. And there were no enemy around reported then. And it was about time that 3RAR joined us.
That's right. You mentioned that the brigade was reinforced by
3RAR.
What were they like? What sort
very
of
good.
Characters?
Very, very, very tough battalion. Very good commanding officer. Most of them, an awful lot of British Army, funnily enough. But they were a very, very good battalion.
Well, were these British people in the Australian Army?
They were an Australian battalion.
Yes. But
have you come across a magazine called Duty First?
No.
I'll show you a copy. Peter Cook has RAR magazine there.
But when you say they were ex-British Army, were they Australians who served
They'd emigrated to Australia.
Oh,
yes.
I see. Yes. And you mentioned also that the brigade was gradually built up, that it got
We had a whole lot of reinforcements arrived from home, who had been thrown out to Japan and then to Korea. Yes.
How did they get on? Did they manage to?
They were very good. I mean, they were all people we knew very well. Mm. You know? Mm. And this was the first 11 arriving back on the scene, put it like that.
What about the sappers and the gunners? Where did they come from?
Entirely American.
They were American. So
entirely.
You have a mixed brigade then of.
Well, you relied on your American gunners and sappers.
Yes.
And transport. We had no transport at all.
Did you have any difficulty working with the Americans?
None whatsoever. Oh. None. Mm. Except, of course, you have this staff business of the forward observation officers being withdrawn.
Yes.
And no one seeming to know about it.
But what about their ways of doing things? Because the American ways of doing things are not necessarily the same as our own.
Well, that's it. And there you have it. I mean, normally speaking, if it had been British Army, we'd have had a battery commander with
battalion headquarters.
Who would have, told the commanding officer. Because they didn't do it like that, they weren't told. There was no, the brigadier couldn't say, stop it, they're our guns. They weren't our guns, they were in support.
When you did call for fire support from the artillery, what sort of response time?
It was very good. I mean, once we got ourselves organised, and that was, after January, after 8th Army, response time was very good. It was the sort of time that we'd expect from our own guns.
Hmm. You mentioned that after moving to Kaesong, you got reinforcements, and you've just said that the first 11 had come back and they were being integrated into the battalion.
Yes.
And you mentioned you visited by General Harding. What was he doing?
General Harding was JOC Southeast Asia, was he not? Yes, I think he was. He merely came to see how we were and talk to us.
Do you remember what he said?
Not very much, no. He congratulated us on what we did and the sort of speech you would imagine any general to make.
Like standard senior officers visiting.
Yes, I mean, there was nothing. I mean, there was no question. I can't remember him saying, in a couple of months' time, you'll be withdrawn and going back to Hong Kong, which is what we were expected was going to happen. He told us the 29 Brigade were coming out. Which we had heard as a rumour.
Yes.
There was nothing particular about his speech, no.
You do mention rumours quite a lot in this part of your memoirs, that you learn things by rumour. What sources of information did you have besides rumours? What was going on the big picture?
Not really. There were no great sort of meetings and briefings and maps, nothing like that.
What about newspapers and radio and other media? Did you get anything from there?
Well, we didn't have much radio and newspapers on how this sort of thing. We didn't have the sophisticated air supply drop we had in Burma. Nothing like that really happened. You got the old newspaper by mail out from home. Yes, certainly.
Did you ever hear anything broadcast by the BBC World Service that term?
Yes, but later on. I got a very good, I think it was a bit looted, sort of wireless set from South Korean House, and I could get BBC World Service on it and say, yes, we did get stuff from them.
So you're saying that at the time of this advance, that the rumours began to spread about what you were going to be doing, that initially you thought that you were just going to expel the Koreans from South Korea. But
that's correct.
A rumor gained the currency that you were going to advance up into the north. And you
that
say
is when the reason we got that was we were at Kimpo Airfield.
Yes.
And there was a Marine squadron there, and they had super communications. Yeah. And we got things like Stars and Stripes from them.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, they told us what their orders were, you know, the targets they were going to be prepared to hit, which was in the north.
Mm. Well, you said, you know, we wondered what the Chinese might think of that.
No, we didn't need. Well, I mean, there was a great deal of discussion on world affairs.
Yes.
As to what might happen if the United Nations Army did go into North Korea.
Who was doing the discussing? Was it throughout
well,
the
Well, this was the United Nations. I mean, this was
yes.
The Indian ambassador had gone there. I mean, it was being freely discussed.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
Was it discussed in the battalion as well?
Oh,
was
yes,
it a matter
I think
of, so. Was there a sort of general view or opinion of what was likely to happen, what ought to happen?
Well, bit of an unknown, really. We were chasing North Koreans, you know. Was it our business to fight the Chinese, you know? When would you see them? What had happened? We didn't know.
What do you remember what you thought at the time about those things, what your views were?
Well, we didn't really have any. There we were, stuck there, and we just kept our fingers crossed and hoped we wouldn't be too badly involved with it.
Were the soldiers, the jocks, were they interested in such things?
Oh, yes.
They were.
Oh, yes. Very much so. But I mean, by which time, you see, you had been in active service for, 2.5 months, it was a way of life you got accustomed to.
Mm. I mean, did they express any views about whether they thought it was a good thing or a bad thing to carry on into the north and
I think they
meet the Chinese?
They were perfectly prepared to chase the North Korean army to hell. I don't think they much relished having to shoot a Chun. I think that was in the back of their minds, yes.
Mm. Why should they have been worried about shooting Chinamen? Would there be any
reason
for that?
Well, because, I mean, this was possibly World War III. Yeah.
You mentioned when you set off from Kae Song, you're advancing northwards and you were accompanied by tanks.
Yes.
Yes. Had you met those chaps before?
No. These were 24D tanks.
Yeah.
They were Patton's. They were a tank battalion. And they were very good.
Mm. How did you communicate with them? Did you have...
That was a problem. You could only communicate with them through their tank telephones at the back. And there was a problem. So what you did was you stuck one of your platoon signalers who rode behind the tank commander, behind his turret. Mm. And that was the only way. I mean, if you rarely see out of shooting, he had to get off very quickly.
Yeah.
And he still had the tank telephone. He could talk to him. But, I mean, this was a great drawback.
Were these chaps in the tanks experienced at working with infantry?
No.
They weren't?
No.
What about your jocks? Did they know about how to
operate tanks? Oh, yes, because some of them,
tanks?
Yes. Quite a few had been in Northwest Europe and so on.
Mm.
Luckily, as I say, we had 2 days' run where we worked it out.
Oh. Was this done by practical exercises?
Well, not
by
really. You did it on the march, you know.
Yes. Oh. Now, you mentioned that when you started moving forwards from Sinmak, you had an order of march led by your company, by A
yes,
company.
Yes, correct.
And you've got tanks going first, followed by tanks with infantry riding on them.
Yes.
Then a platoon in trucks, then the mortar section, the machine gun section, and another platoon, then more tanks, and
that's
the rest
it,
of the tanks. Well, where were you at that stage? Where was A Company headquarters in that order of march?
In the leading 3,000 weight, because my Land Rover had, for some unknown reason, broken down. So I
yes.
hadn't impressed the leading 3,000 weight, much to the horror of the coloured driver, who never really sort of had any idea of what was going on before. Mm.
Why did you choose that particular place to be? To be sort of at
Well, I had to be there because one had to see what was going on at the leading platoon with all the tanks.
Yes.
One had to be in a place, if necessary, if they got stuck, to get the other platoons forward on the mortars and machine guns. So that was the natural place for the commander of the advance guard to be.
How did you manage to keep in touch with the people behind you then?
Oh, that was easy, because that was on the battalion net. You see, we transferred the signal set to the battalion of Red Truck.
Did you know anything about the enemy or their likely positions or anything like
well,
that?
Well, yes, we knew that Sarawan was the source of Aldershot of North Korea.
Yeah.
And we were very likely to run into opposition there, if not before.
If you run into a serious block on the road, what was your intention? How were you going to deal with it?
Carry it, and then the next battalion, which was 3RAR, would pass through us and carry on.
Yeah. I mean, were you thinking in terms of putting one of the rear platoons off the road to do a flanking movement?
Oh, yes, certainly.
So
which we did. Which we did. Yeah.
What, fixed with the forward platoon and outflank?
No, we called the second... The second or third platoon in. That's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
We were eventually stopped by a block at Sarawan, and we outflanked it.
What sort of block was it? Was it a physical block on the road covered by...
Yes, it was.
How did they block the road? What did they...
Well, a tree trunk or something. Really low importance whatsoever. What was much more block on the road was the tank battalion commander had a light aeroplane. And once the battle started, he wanted to see what was going on. So he said, land his bloody aeroplane on the road.
In the middle of the battle?
The other fire thing, you see. Which effectively stopped the tanks and other infantry getting forward.
This sounds like a real nuisance.
I'd rather have had him on the road up above when he was trying to control the battle, which was none of his business, you know.
Yes. Were the tanks under your command then?
Yes.
So you'd got...
Yes.
How many tanks had you got under your command in that, for that action?
About 12. I had a squadron.
So you had a squadron of tanks with company of infantry?
Companies, yeah. Each battalion had a squadron.
That's a rather lavish scale of tanks.
It was the first time we'd seen tanks in those numbers before.
And did when you had to clear the block, did the tanks give you the right sort of fire support? Did
they
go off?
Absolutely excellent. Yeah.
What about the Koreans? Do you think that they made a reasonable job of doing their
They were in a terrible muddle. I mean, for one platoon, and that's two which I'd flank them.
Yes.
And we counted 40 of them dead, and we captured 10 light machine guns, with only about 5 casualties to ourselves.
Yes.
You would say they didn't do very well.
10 light machine guns is rather a large number. It's a lot of firepower.
Well, it was counting 40 dead, they had about a company in position on that ridge, I think.
Did you manage to take any prisoners at that stage?
No.
So they're either
the
dead or gone.
Came later on that day. No.
Right.
They'd beaten it.
When you were ordered to stop, consolidate in place while B and C went forward, how did you go about the consolidation? Did you dig in?
Well,
we just
dug in on either side of the road and held a sort of firm base for the rest of the boys to go through.
What happened to your tanks? Did they stay with you?
Tanks stayed with me.
I think you mentioned that an American general came up and...
Oh, don't talk about him, yes.
Well, I want you to talk about him. I'm not going to talk about him.
Hey.
you tell me about him.
He was extraordinary business. I had no idea who he was. There was a cortege of this guy who had a small escort of two other jeeps besides his own, and with a sort of fair covering of the world press, probably another two jeeps.
Yes.
The first time he caused a bit of disturbance when some of his staff shot some chickens for dinner behind the bar. So they were told,
Isn't the normal way of killing a chicken to break its neck, wring its neck?
What?
Isn't the normal way to kill a chicken to wring its neck?
Yeah, but you've got to catch it first. I mean,
anyway,
they thought they had a bit of practice with their vessels. And then, having done this successful flanking attack, he came up and said, "Great boys, you've driven them off. Kindly advance and murder the rest, you see." And I said, "My orders are, to hold this fan base and the rest can go through. It's much quicker. In any case, my platoons are now dispersed. By the time I get them back on the road, we're going to lose time." And he said, "Don't you realize that if we can get this particular crossroads in Sariwan, we will be, the 1st Cavalry Division will be given the priority to Pyongyang." And I said, "Well, no, it doesn't worry me very much who gets into Pyongyang." Yes, he said, "But we can't have any cavalry. Our 1st Cavalry, we were first into Luzon, and then we were first into Manila, first into Tokyo." I said, "I'm not terribly interested in, the honor of the 1st Cavalry Division. Basically, I've got a job to do. I've done it, Can't argue." I gather he was eventually worsted by the Australians, but I mean, it was. But his job was, again, you talk about the strange ways the American Army operated, was to act as referee, as it were, for the high command to see who reached the crossroads first and who would get the priority going north of Pyongyang. The other lot were coming up on another road on our left, you see.
They were on a parallel access.
Sort of, yes. Mm. Unfortunately, the parallel access.
It converged then at Sariwan.
Yeah.
Did you know about that going on before you set off?
Had
you no idea about
no,
that?
No idea.
I mean, were you getting your orders down through the battalion and brigade chain of command? Was that the?
No, he was right beside me.
Yes, well, I mean, presumably the orders you'd been given already came down the line.
Orders came down the line.
Normal chain of command.
Yes, sure.
Was he upset when you said you couldn't?
He was. I think he was hopping. Upset is not the right word. Hopping mad, and eventually, Aubrey Code dealt with him. But
Aubrey Code was the brigade command. What did he do?
I don't know, but I mean, we never saw that general again afterwards.
Presumably, you'd got one platoon who'd gone off to the left to take the hill with the orchard.
They were about 600 yards away.
600 yards away. One platoon on the road on the tanks.
Well, slightly on the right, too.
Slightly on the right.
And the third platoon also on the right, holding the right flank. When I say the company wasn't in a mess, it would have taken some time to reconsolidate them again.
How long did it take for B and C to come through and go resume the move forward? How long did it take for B and C to come up and go through?
They were through very quickly. Mm. Very quickly indeed.
Mm. So did the 1st Cavalry Division have the honour of...
Yes, they did, definitely, yes.
You're saying that you went into Sariwan later, and there you ran into some Koreans.
It was a strange ambush,
yes.
But it wasn't an ambush at all. Well, the people had lost their way.
Yes,
and they were driving backwards as fast as they could to the north.
They were stragglers, presumably.
I think so, yes. Rather well-armed stragglers. I'm sitting literally in a barber's chair, a shop cigar. And suddenly the glass beside me absolutely shattered in smithereens. And this was these guys letting off from this truck with their equivalent Russian Tommy gun equivalents. AK-4, not the AK-47, the other thing they had before that. I couldn't think what the hell had gone on.
What happened to them? I mean, were they...
Yeah, they were murdered. We murdered them. Nothing was left. But in the meantime, the commanding officer, second in command, and various other people, not having realised what had happened, had gone off on a reconnaissance and run straight into the retreating North Korean army, whereupon they had to hide in the haystack for that night.
Sounds as though things were getting a little bit chaotic if you were getting intermingled.
Well, it was. And then, you see, when the Australians came through, they came through and blocked the road to the north and captured a whole Australian North Korean regiment.
I mean, did that North Korean regiment try and fight their way through? Or
yes, they had the bloody hope. When I take this off, I'll show you. You've never heard of Peter Cook?
No.
No, you should have done. Mm. Because he would be a mine of information for you. Mm. Unfortunately, he lives in Sydney, Australia, but never mind about that.
A small matter of the airfare. Right. You're pushing on to Pyongyang. What sort of place was Pyongyang?
Well, we never really got into it. Huge place. It was in not very good state. Mm. We went straight through to relieve the members of 187 Parachute Regiment, the American Parachute Regiment, which had dropped north of there. We practiced on nothing at Pyongyang. I can't really say anything about it.
What sort of condition were 187 in when you joined them?
187 had fought one bloody good battle, they had quite a few casualties, but they were a very good good battalion. Mm. And what is more, they didn't have a proper medical team, so they got hold of a team from the 50th Indian Field Ambulance, who come in. They were one of the best units in the Indian Army, I think, and they're kind of running around. And without orders or without authority from India, this medical team from 50th Indian Field Ambulance dropped with 187.
They dropped with them at the same time?
Yes, they did. Mm. My God said, if there's going to be an operation, my boys will be part of it, and help the Indian government.
What were your own medical arrangements?
We didn't have any.
Not at
all. We were entirely dependent on the Americans until 50th Parachute Field Ambulance joined us. Mm. They were entirely then 27th Brigade. They were marvelous. Gosh, they were good.
What were the main sort of hazards to health and so forth in Korea, apart from enemy action?
Well, in the winter, of course, bloody cold. In the summer, you had all sorts of nasty sort of odd diseases going around.
Mm. What sort of things?
Well, typhoid. But I mean, okay, medical cover I would think was pretty good. Mm. But the Americans, of course, believed in a very different style of medical evacuation than we did. I mean, the big idea was if a chap was shot, you got him back to a base hospital in Japan as quick as possible.
Yes.
It was a marvellous thing of John Pinman, one of our company commanders, who had been wounded in a hospital in Japan, and a general in his staff appear with medals who proceeded to pin one on every patient. And this is the Purple Heart, the one you get to be wounded. And they come to John Pinman's bed and and John, who was a delightful chap, said, "General, I'm terribly sorry to be rude, but I don't think I can accept this." He said, "Hell with it, boy." He said, "I can give you a Purple Heart. Yeah, United States come and give you a Purple Heart. You get a Purple Heart."
Did he wear it?
No, not without him. But I mean, they wrote a nice letter saying, perhaps some slight misunderstanding, but,
Was the battalion generally healthy during the time?
Oh, yes, I would say very healthy. Marvellous. Except I can't say they're very appetizing. We had American K rations, and they got fed up with them. The Americans had the C rations, then we had British C rations. They were even better. I mean, we never were short of food, that I remember, in the whole Korean operation. Anyway, the American supply system was quite excellent.
What about water? Was that
readily
available?
Well, we had water distillation tablets, and of course there's all the water in the world in Korea. Mm.
So, imagine purifying local resources.
Yes, I mean, you eat a